We're holding on Shabbos, top of page tests, towards the end of Osiyot Beis. I'm still in the middle of discussing Neiros Chanukah and various dinim and Agadah of them. The Gemara says, "My mevorech." What is the actual bracha that you say on Neir Chanukah? So mevorech Hashem kedushanu mitzvayis abitzimon lahadik Neir Shel Chanukah. Okay, you have the different girsos, whether Shel Chanukah or girsos without. You even have a girsa that some people say Shel La Chanukah, combining it together as one word. Anyway. The Rif and the Rosh add in the text of the Gemara also the other two brachas, Shas and Nisim and Shech Yom. So the Gemara asks, V'heichan Tzivonu? We're saying V'tzivonu, L'hadlik Neir Chanukah, but where is the V'tzivonu? Where does Hashem command us in the Torah to light menorah? Reb Ivya Omer Miloy Sosu. So Reb Ivya says, because the Pasuk says, Loy Sosu, you shouldn't turn away from anything that the Chachamim tell you. So since the Chachamim told us to light menorah, then therefore that's included in the mitzvah in the Torah to listen to them. Reb Nechemya Omar, Reb Nechemya says, you have a different pasuk that expresses the same point. Sha'al avichav yagedcha, ask your father and he'll tell you. Zikei nechav yom ruloch, ask your elders, meaning the chachamim, and they will inform you what to do. So therefore, since they told us that we have to light menorah, then we have to light Neiros Chanukah, then therefore that becomes a mitzvah. There is, by the way, the Rambam mentions in his Shoshim on Sefer HaMitzvahs. Don't think he says that means that Neir Chanukah actually counts as one of the 613 mitzvahs. The 613 mitzvahs have to be all ones that are Daraisa. This is definitely a mitzvah Derabanan. All the Gemara is saying is, in other words, that it's a subset of the mitzvah of listening to the Chachamim. Uriyur Moni HaMitzvahs, Uriyur Sfarim and Piyutim and whatever that listed the mitzvahs often count the Neiros Chanukah as one of them, and the Rambam argues against that. The Ramban defends those Uriyur Gaonim and Rishonim. He says, in effect, this is all part of, you have the Torah is telling you when a Nes has happened to the Jewish people, you have to thank Hashem, and here you have, this is a particular example of that, where a great Nes happened to the Jewish people, and therefore we have to thank Hashem for it. So therefore there is justification for calling it to a certain extent Daraisa, even though of course it happened long after the Torah was given. The Gemara goes on to discuss the question, or the issue, suppose a person has, we know you're supposed to light Neiros Chanukah by your door. And the original idea was to light it by the door that actually faces towards Rosh Hashanah. You still have nowadays in Eretz Yisrael, they often do that. In Chutz Laaretz, for many different reasons, including the weather and the goyim, we generally can't do that. So the Gemara discusses the situation. Suppose a person has two doors, and you have it can mean the expression in the Gemara is chotzu sheyesh la beis psachim. So it can mean that the chotzu itself has two doorways, one facing in each of two different directions to two different suites or whatever. Or it can mean Tosfos earlier in the perek discusses that it may mean that you have two doors in your house that open up to different sides of the chotzu. Whatever the case, so the Gemara says you have to actually light menorah by both of them. Because otherwise, there's chashad, otherwise people are going to suspect that you're not lighting menorah at all. Nowadays, again, since generally we don't light our Pesach base in Machutz, so you have much less of an issue with that. But the Gemara says, so where do we see that there's a concept of chashad? Where do we see that such a thing is reason enough to do a mitzvah a certain way? So here's where the Gemara brings, Tanya, Omer Reb Shimon, Bishvil Arba Dvorim Omer Torah Laniach Peah B'Seif Sadehu. There are four reasons why the Torah says to leave Peah at the end of your field. The expression in the Pasuk is that you should leave Pa'as Sadcha, the edge or the corner of your field. So why Dafka the edge? And Rashi points out, since the expression in the Pasuk is Lois Chala, don't end it off, that implies, in other words, when you're getting ready to end off your harvest, don't leave some of it for the poor people. Why? So for four reasons, says Reb Shimon. And B'chlah, we find in many places in Chas that Reb Shimon is very much into Darshin and Taima Dikra, that he says when you have a mitzvah in the Torah, you should always try to find the reason behind it and see therefore on that basis what cases the din will apply to and then so forth. So number one, b'nei gezel aniyim. Number one, because of stealing from the poor people, meaning the person is gonna keep the payer for himself. And when people tell him, "What are you doing?" he's gonna say, "No, I'll leave. I already left someplace else in the field." Like this, where he has to leave it at the end of his field. It's obvious if he's taking that he's stealing from the aniyim. The second reason is b'nei bittul aniyim, in order not to waste the aniyim's time. Like this, actually, Gezel Aniyim, really, the Gemara is going to explain in a second. It doesn't mean necessarily that the Balabas himself is going to take. It means that he's going to try to reserve it for his relative or his friend who's poor. So that's Gezel Aniyim, Pnei Bitul Aniyim. The second reason is not to waste the Aniyim's time. The Gemara is going to explain each of these. Or Pnei Chashad, and because of suspicion. Or Mishum Bal Techala, and because the Pasuk says you shouldn't end off your field. So let's explain. Mishum Gezel Aniyim means Shalai Yira Balabais, Shalai Pnuya. You don't want the Balabais to see an available time when there are no Aniyim around. V'yom L'kroi V'oni, he raise a payah, and then he's going to say to his relative who's poor, here is the payah. Unlike with Trumas and Maestris, where you can pick what Kohen or Levi to give it to, Matnas Aniyim, you can't do that. You have to give it to whatever Oni comes, whichever Aniyim are there, are the ones who have the right to take it. So like this, if you were going to leave it someplace in the middle of your field, you'd have the ability to reserve it for your relative. And like this, when you leave it at the end, then you won't be able to do that. Not to waste the Aniyim's time, is a Shloyu Aniyim Yoshman Mashamir, Ashtam Aniyah Balabai's payer. So the Aniyim don't have to sit there waiting. And when is the view now the Balabas is going to give payer? We got to be ready. Like this, they know only when he reaches the end of his field is he going to be giving payer. So this way they don't have to waste their time. The third one, Mepnei Chashad, Shaloyu Ovim B'Shavim Omrim, so that passers by who see the end of the field harvested don't say, a curse should come on a person who did not leave paya in his field. So like this, when it's on, and he might, and so you have, in other words, he might have left it in the middle, but they're not going to realize that. Like this, when it's always left at the end, then that way there won't be a possibility of that. And the fourth reason was Mishum Bal Techala, because the Pasuk says don't end off your field. So the Pasuk says, why is that a separate reason? Alto Kulu Lav Mishum Bal Techala Ninu. All four of them are based on all of the reasons Reb Shimon is giving, are all reasons why the Torah says Bal Techala or Loi Sechala. Why are we listing that as though it's a separate reason when that's the underlying reason for all of them? So Amar Rav Mishnei HaRamoyin. So Rav says what he means by Mishum Bal Techala is because of cheaters. You might have people who are over on that. And then when people say to them, what do you mean? This is the end of your field. Why are you harvesting it? They're going to say, oh, I already left payah someplace else in the field. So Mishum Bal Techala, in other words, means to prevent people from cheating and taking the payah for themselves. But in any case, we see from that, the Gemara says that there is a concept of chashad, even in things d'araisa, and therefore, yes, when it comes to Neris Hanukkah, you may have that concern as well, and therefore the person may have to light it in both places. Okay. The Gemara goes on. Amar Avuna, harogel b'ner Chanukah having my bonim tamid chachamim. If a person is regular and careful with the ner, and you have Chanukah over here in parenthesis, there are actually different explanations whether which neris we're referring to, then he will have children who are tamid chachamim. Now Marsha learns that we're talking about not the neris of Chanukah, but rather the neris of Shabbos. Therefore, he keeps out the word Chanukah, and he explains. Unlike the other ones that the Gemara is going to go on to say, the expression hazahir, a person is careful with them, those are mitzvahs that a person does himself. Tefillin, tzitzit, mezuzah, tzitzis, etc. Neiras Shabbos, the husband himself doesn't light, the wife lights him. So therefore, it uses the expression harogil rather than hazahir. He can't be zahir in them himself, but he's rogil in them. He accustoms his wife to make sure to light in time. On the other hand, there are different other. The Rif over here brings an explanation that it is in fact Neiris Chanukah because Neiris Chanukah, after all, was the goyim were trying lashkicham Torah secha. So now that we have brought back the Torah and we light to remember the nest. So therefore, so when a person is careful with that, it shows that the Torah is choviv to him, and therefore he deserves to have children. Rabbi Levi Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, has an explanation that takes that idea and goes further with it and explains b'chlal, the whole victory of Chanukah, particularly, had to do with Torah Shabbat Peh. That is one reason, that's one deeper reason b'chlal, why Chanukah is only in Torah Shabbat Peh. There's nothing of it in Torah Shabbat Chsav. And he brings various other angles on how it has more to do with Torah Shabbat Peh. And therefore, appropriately, the person is careful with Neris Chanukah, then therefore he'll have children who are Tamar Chachamim in Torah Shabbat Peh. Iyun Yaakov over here has a whole different explanation. He says, I mean, listen, if you're going to go that way, whether it's Shabbos candles or whether it's Hanukkah candles, either way, everybody lights them. So everybody would have kids who are Tamar Chachamim Lamaisa. You don't see that. So he says, rather, Harogil B'ner means a person regularly has lamps and lights around his house so that people can learn Torah. So therefore, so now his reward for that is that Taki, he'll have children who live up to that and are Tamar Chachamim. Continues the Gemara, Hazohir b'mezuzah, a person is careful with the mitzvah of mezuzah, Zoicha l'dira no, he will be Zoicha to have a nice house. Hazar with tzitzis, zeicha l'talisna. Person is careful with tzitzis. He'll be zeicha to have a nice garment that he can put tzitzis on. You know, back then they didn't have like we do. Like we have a separate talis cotton or talis gadol to put the tzitzis on. Your tzitzis went on your actual clothing itself. So therefore, so if you're careful with that, and by the way, you have, you know, the Gemara points out in Menachos, say a person could conceivably live their whole life without doing the mitzvah of tzitzis. You don't necessarily have to wear a four-cornered garment. You could have your regular garment happens to not have four corners, and you're not actually chayiv in the mitzvah of tzitzis. So now, when a person is careful with that, then he's zoicha to talisna. Hazohi b'kiddush hayoyim, person is careful with kiddush of Shabbos, where, after all, in principle, he could have made it on challah or whatever, but instead he makes it on kiddush. Zeicho, instead he makes it on wine. Zeicho malik gar v'yayin. He will have the schus to fill up barrels of wine. In other words, Hashem will provide him a lot of wine. Mida keneged mida. The Gemara in Megillah actually has a story involving one of the Chachamim, Reb Zakkai, where they asked him what's his special schus, and he said that he was always careful with making kiddush on wine instead of ever being yotze with challah or whatever. And he tells how one time his mother pawned her tichel in order to have money for kiddush because they otherwise couldn't afford it. And eventually, Taka, they had hundreds or even thousands, the Gemara has different versions over there, barrels of wine. So that's an example of what we're saying over here. The Gemara continues. Rav Huna have a rogel to have a cholif betoni a pischa de bay oven nagla. Rav Huna would regularly pass by again and again. Cholif betoni means he would pass by and then he would pass by again, meaning he would constantly be passing by. By the way, as far as the harogel b'ner, by the way, Rashi learns that it means both the lights of Shabbos and the lights of Hanukkah, and the reason is because ner mitzvah v'torah. So you have the different possibilities, which kind of neiris we're talking about, where Marsha says Davka means neiris Shabbos, and the Rif says it means Davka neiris, and the Rabbi Yitzchok says it means Davka neiris Hanukkah, and Rashi is saying both. So Rav Huna have a rogel to have a cholif betoni a pischa de Rav Oven Nagla. Rav Huna used to regularly pass by the entrance of the house of Rav Oven the carpenter. He saw that Rav Oven was regularly had a lot of candles in his house. So again, Rashi explains that we're talking about Shabbos candles. According to Iyon Yaakov, it could be more like we were talking, like he said before, that in other words, he always made sure to have candles or lamps lit in his house so people could learn Torah even at night. Omar, so he says, Trei Gavri Ravavri Nafti Mehocha, two great people will come from this household. Sure enough, Nafti Menai, Rab Idi Ba'oven, Rab Chia Ba'oven, those two Chachamim were Rab Oven's sons in the source of his lights. Similarly, Rav Chista have a rogel to have a cholif betona apischa de bein nosha de Rav Shizbi. Rav Chista used to regularly pass by the entrance of bein nosha of Rav Shizbi. Now, what is bein nosha? Rashi says two possibilities. It can mean the father of Rav Shizbi, or it can mean the father-in-law of Rav Shizbi. And different mafoshim bring different proofs one way or the other, which one it is. Anyway. Again, he saw that Rav Shizbi's father or father-in-law used to regularly light a lot of candles for Shabbos. So he says a great person will come from here. And sure enough, Nafik went out of Shizbi, and Rav Shizbi came from that family. So now, why the difference with Rav Huna, where he said two great Chachamim will come from here, whereas Rav Chista is saying only one? So Tosfos explains that in Rav Oven's case, when we said to have a rogel, it's really supposed to be regili. Both the husband and the wife were careful to have a lot of candles. So therefore, in that schos, they'll have two sons who were talking about chachamim. Whereas by Rav Shizbi's father or father-in-law, it was the woman particularly who lit, and therefore he says there'll be one person. There'll be one great talmid chacham who comes from here. Marsha says that's a little bit of a doichah. When you're passing by there on Friday night, how are you supposed to know who lit what candles? So rather, he says what it means, and also the fact is, the girsa we have in front of us is rogul by both them. So rather, what it means is, he says, Rav Huna saw that they used to always have a lot of lamps and candles lit over there Friday night and Hanukkah, even weekdays. Rav Chista only saw that sometimes Shabbos or Hanukkah they had. So therefore, he's saying one Gavri Rabba as opposed to Rav Oven who had them all the time. So therefore, with him, there's going to be two great people. The Gemara goes on. So the Gemara goes on to discuss about the proper times for lighting Shabbos candles and for lighting the menorah. So Deveso, did Rabbi Yosef have us ma'achro madlikas lo? Rabbi Yosef's wife used to light late. Now, not late, obviously, not after Shabbos begins. In fact, you have toast for Shabbos, but she would light fairly close to Shabbos on the grounds that she figured if she lights much earlier, then it's not obvious you're lighting the covered Shabbos. You have to remember, you know, I mean, nowadays, when you're lighting Shabbos candles, it's quite obvious you're doing it for covered Shabbos because you have plenty of illumination in the house otherwise. But back then, when all of their illumination was with candles or lamps or whatever, if you're lighting it long before Shabbos, she figured it may not be obvious that I'm doing it for covered Shabbos. But Omar Rabbi Yosef, but Rabbi Yosef tells her, Tanena, we learn in a Braisa that when it talks about the Amud Osher, the Amud Onan, the Amud Eish, that accompanied the Jewish people, the pasuk is la yomish amud ha'onan yoimam. The pillar of cloud did not go away by day, the amud ha'esh loyla, and the pillar of fire by night. Now Rashi points out that the pasuk already says that Hashem was going before them, the amud onan and the amud ha'esh. So why does it have to repeat that it didn't move away? Malamad sha'amud ha'onan mashlem la'amud ha'esh. This teaches us that the Amud HaOnan would come there before the Amud HaEsh would go away. It would fill it in. So in other words, you'd have, at night, you have the Amud HaEsh. Came morning, before the Amud HaEsh went away, the Amud HaOnan would already be there. The Amud HaEsh, Mashlim Amud HaOnan, and vice versa, each one, and then vice versa, the Amud HaEsh would come before the Amud HaOnan went away. So the point is, in other words, we see that, yes, it is, even though you could argue they don't need the Amud HaEsh until it actually gets to be nightfall, nevertheless, we see that Hashem sent them the Amud HaEsh early. So therefore, you see, by the same token, you can be lighting Shabbos candles early, and there's no problem with it. Sabra Lakduma. So now she figured to make it much earlier. Amala Ahu Sabra. But a certain old person told her, and Tosfos mentions in Chulin that Ahu Sava in the Gemara may mean Eliyahu Navi. Anyway, Tanei, no, we learn in a Braisa, Ovad Shalom Yachdim Ovad Shalom Yachdim. You shouldn't do it too early. You shouldn't do it too late. You do have to do it enough time before Shabbos that you have Tosfos Shabbos, but don't do it too early because, yeah, then yes, it's not obvious that you're doing it with covered Shabbos. The halacha is you can light from Plaga Mincha onward, so an hour and a quarter before Shkia. To be exact, a show is minus and a quarter before Shkia. Okay. Omar Rabbah. So we talked before about the various lamps and lights that a person has around his house and how that gives him the schos to have children or Tamar Chachamim. So Rabbah says, Omar Rabbah says more in this connection. Derochim Rabbanan, Havule Bnin Rabbanan. A person who loves the Chachamim will himself have children who are Chachamim. So one thing, Ion Yaakov points out, he loves the Chachamim, Terachim of Abonim, therefore he ends up having children who themselves are Chachamim. The Moikir Rabbanon, when he respects the Chachamim, Havolei Chasan Vosa Rabbanon, then he will have, his host will be that he has sons-in-law. Actually, this that he'll have children who are Chachamim, Rashi, where he says, Va'avose Alem Ka'avabem. The Moikir Rabbanon, when he respects the Chachamim, then he will have sons-in-law who are Chachamim. And the point is, the same way as he respects the Chachamim, the same way the sons-in-law respect him. The Dochil Merabbanon, when he fears the Chachamim, who gufei have it serve him in Rabbanon, then he himself will have the schos to become a Talmud Chacham. Marsha points out that usually Ava is greater than Yira. But what it is if he's, Marsha explains like this, if he loves the Chachamim, he must himself already be the Talmud Chacham himself. Otherwise, if he was an Ama Oretz, we find the famous Gemara in Psachim that says that Ama Oretz hate the Chachamim, as we find Rabbi Akiva used to say when he was an Ama Oretz. So therefore, so now if he loves Chachamim, then he can't have the schus that he himself would be a Talmud Chacham, because of necessity, he must already be one. Therefore, his source will be that he'll have children of Chachamim, as opposed to if he only respects them or only fears them, then if he only fears them where fear is less than love, then he himself can become a Talmud Chacham. With that said, actually, Hagoris Hagroah, the Gemara flips around those last two. He says the Moikir Rabbanon, that he'll become a Tzurim Rabbanon himself, and the Dochel Rabbanon, then he'll have sons-in-law who are Chachamim. The ilav barhochihu. Anyway, if he's not capable of that, namely Rashi says he doesn't regularly learn Torah, then he can't become a Talmid Chacham. But then what will happen is, as a reward for the fact that he fears the Chachamim, mishtaman milik tzuvim rabbanan, his words will be listened to as much as people listen to those of a young Talmid Chacham. Okay. Further on in the perek, it talks about the point suppose on Shabbos a person puts out the Shabbos candles because there's a sick person over there, and the light is going to disturb him. So the Mishnah says potter, and actually that's one of three examples in Masech the Shabbos where it's not only potter but mutter because for the sake of the chol. So that brings the Gemara into the following discussion. They ask the following question. La'ela literally means above. Rashi says it means in front of Rab Tanchum from Noi. Rashi brings, for example, we have by Hashem. They're not obviously above Hashem, but they're far away from Hashem, so therefore they can be described metaphorically as above. Ben Yoyod also points out the Chacham would be sitting, and the people who are coming with the question would be standing, so therefore they're literally above. Anyway, they asked the question, are you allowed to put out the lamp, to put out the candle on Shabbos because there's a sick person on Shabbos? On the face of it, they're asking because they partially didn't know. So they may not have known the din that's in the Mishnah, and therefore the Tanchum has to answer them. With that said, the Rif and Iyun Yaakov talk about different angles, and Anaf Yosef talk about different angles on what exactly the question may have been. It may not have been just the simple question. First of all, all of them point out it obviously wasn't that they and Rashi also hints at this. It obviously wasn't something that they're asking we need to know right now, because we're going to have Rab Tanchum is going to give them a whole drosha first. And obviously, if it was a question they need the answer to immediately because it's Pekuach Nefesh, then he's not going to do that. So rather, what it was is this is either it's a theoretical question or maybe even they're not even asking him on Shabbos itself. They're asking him on a weekday, the din that they need to know for the following Shabbos and so forth. And therefore, he has time to give them a whole drasha. Rashi explains that's how they would do. They would start when they had a question like that. They would start with Agadah in order. They would start with Agadah and then get that has something to do with the question, and then eventually get back to the answer to the question. Further on, at the end of the whole drasha, Rashi explains that since you had, in particular, there would be women and other Amei Oretz over there. So the Chachamim would take the opportunity to give a whole drasha like that, because Rashi says you have Noshim and Amei Oretz would come. So the Darshanim, like the Tanchum, wanted to draw people's attention, and therefore they would give a whole drasha. You actually find there's a sefer, as far as we know, it's the first sefer written after the times of the Gemara called Shiltas to Rav Achoi Goin, and it's structured in much the same way. Each chapter of it begins with an issue of halacha, and then it goes on the original of it. You can find the Kisveyad or whatever would have some discussion of the relevant halachas and a whole piece of Agadah having to do. For example, the first Shilta over there is on Hilchos Shabbos. So he starts with the din that you have to light candles for Shabbos. Then he goes on and talks about at some length over there various pieces of Agadah from Gemara and Bedroshim and whatever about the importance of Shabbos candles and keeping Shabbos in general. Then he goes into a question about a certain din in Hilchos Shabbos and then more discussion, and eventually he gets to the answer. So it's a similar structure to what we have here in the Gemara. And here we have a Sheilta, and that's why that sefer is called Sheiltas, because it's written in the same style. Anyway. So again, before answering the question, he gave them a whole drosha. What exactly was the question? The Rif explains that the question may have been, should we remove the candle Is it better to, after all, removing it would only be an isur mukta, to put it out would actually be malacha daraisa. On the other hand, you should say that, on the other hand, the fact is it's going to take longer to get it out, maybe put it out right away in order to give the chola immediate relief. Anaf Yosef explains that maybe the question was that it was lit specially for Shabbos, is it right to be putting it out, etc. Anyway, so Posach va'omar, so Rav Tanchum, before answering the question, starts with a drasha. He says, "Ant Shloima Malka, you Shloima Amelach, on chokhmosach, on suchlasun nusach. Where is your chokhma and where is your knowledge? And where is your understanding?" Marshall explains the word suchlasun nusach is the Aramaic word for tvuna, for understanding. But also, he says it can also mean meloshin sichlos, meloshin shtus. That Shlomo HaMelech himself, after all, uses the expression Kehelos, that I looked at Chochma and Hololos and Sichlos. So you can mean that also. Anyway, so where is your Chochma and where is your Bina? Or alternatively, where is your Chochma and where is your foolishness? Loy Dayecha Shadvarecha Sois Yogive David Abicha. Not only did what you say in a pasuk in Kehelos contradict what your father David said, Ela Shadvarecha Sois Yun Zeseh, but your own words, Shlomo HaMelech, contradict one another. So this was the introduction to his drasha. David Abicha Omaloy Amesim Yahaluka. David HaMelech, your father says in Tilim, the dead will not praise Hashem. Yet you and Kehela say, I praise the dead who have already died. So we see, so in other words, you're saying that there's an advantage to the dead. David HaMelech is saying that there's not. The living are better off because they can praise Hashem. Why don't we say that maybe the Pasuk Lo Yameisim Yahalel Luka is talking about, for example, Rishoyim B'chayim Kruyim Meisim. Okay, because the fact is the Pasuk is saying that on one level it does mean that. The Alter Rebbe explains in the Geras HaTshuva that on one level it does mean just that. Lo Yameisim Yahalel Luka means, in other words, that the Rishoyim of the B'chayim Kruyim Meisim, they can't properly praise Hashem as long as they're tied down with their Averis. But nevertheless, at least on the simple level, it means actual dead people. Anyway, you yourself are saying that I praise the dead. But you yourself, Shlomo, are also saying in a different pasuk, the living dog is better than the dead lion. So what is it? You yourself can't seem to make up your mind. Are the living better off or are the dead better off? So loikasha. So the answer is that we can reconcile that. There's no question. A person should always occupy himself with Torah and mitzvahs before he dies. Once he dies, he's no longer able to do Torah and mitzvahs, and Hashem gets no further praise from him. So therefore, so in that sense, that's what we mean, lo yameisim yahaluka. So tzaddikim, fine, but in other words, the goof still can't do mitzvahs anymore. So Marsha explains, in other words, that, for example, what we mean is even mitzvahs that a person conceivably could still be doing after he's buried. For example, the halacha is you're allowed to bury a mess in tachrichim that are made out of kelayim. You're not allowed to wear kelayim, but he's dead, and mitzvahs don't apply to him anymore. Okay, there is an opinion there, Marsha brings, there is an opinion that not. The reason is, well, because by tchias and nesim, they're going to come alive in their clothing, and you don't want them to be walking around then in shackles. But the point is, in other words, that as far as doing mitzvah, that even a mitzvah that conceivably you could say he could do in the grave, nevertheless, he's potter from. Another example would be tzitzis on a garment. In principle, you can bury a person in a four-cornered garment without tzitzis, and there's no issue with it. The minhag is that instead of actually cutting it off, the older minhag was you cut off a corner. Nowadays, after the minhag is you just kind of fold it in, but whatever, anyway. So that's what David means by lo yameisim yahaluka. V'hainu d'omer Rabbi Yochanan, and this also fits with what Rabbi Yochanan said, ma'i d'chtib b'meisim chofshi. What does the pasuk mean? That it says in the dead there is freedom means kiven shemes adam nasa chofshi min atodo min amitzvus. Once a person dies, then he's free from Torah and mitzvahs. So therefore, so in that sense, the living are better off than the dead. So what does Shlomo mean by praising the dead? He means when the Jewish people sinned in the Midbar with the Cheta Egel, this week's parasha, Omad Moshe lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so Moshe stood up in front of Hashem, he said many tefillos and many pleas to Hashem, and he wasn't answered. But when he said, remember for Avraham, Yitzchak, and Israel, your servants, miyad nana, then right away he was answered. So he wasn't answered in the schuz, in his own schuz, in the schuz of all the tzaddikim that were in his times, etc., only in the schuz of the others. So isn't Shlomo very right in saying that I praise the dead who already died? Because there's schusim, help, even when the schusim of the living do not. There's actually a medrash that says that, you know, we know that the Jewish people are compared to many different kinds of trees and other such things. So one comparison is the Jewish people are compared to a vine. Gef and Mitzrayim Tasia, Kerem Hashem Tzvok is Beis Yisrael, and other expressions like that. The vort is grapevines. You need something to hold them up, otherwise the branches of them are weak and they lie all over the ground. So one way you hold them up with is with sticks. So therefore, you have dead sticks holding up the living vines, and therefore, the Medrash says in the same way that the others who've already passed away are holding up and keeping the Jewish people going. In that connection, by the way, you have the Medrash, you have the two different Midrashim on this week's parasha, the two different versions where one Medrash has that Moshe that Moshe counts seven living tzaddikim that are in his times, and Hashem says, okay, you need 10, just like Avraham when he was davening for Sodom. So and Moshe asks for the schus of Avraham and Yaakov to be joined with them, and a different Medrash has it that Moshe is able to find 77 tzaddikim in his times, and then the others count with them. There's the famous thing after the Alter Rebbe was released from jail the second time. We may have mentioned it before in the shir. There was a masnagin at that time by the name of Notan Notkin, who had connections with the government. He made a deal with the Alter Rebbe. He'll use his pull with the government to get the Alter Rebbe not released from jail. He was already released from jail, but he was under house arrest in Petersburg. The deal was that Notkin would use his pull to get them to agree for that the Alter Rebbe should be able to leave Petersburg and go back home if afterwards he go and visits three big Mesnag, the Shetamad HaChamim, and one of them asked the Alter Rebbe how to reconcile these two Midrashim, and the Alter Rebbe explains to him that they're taking the different views, whether you view the whole Jewish people as one unit or whether you view them as 12 individual Shvatim. If you view them as one unit, then you only need one minion of tzaddikim to work for all of them. So then you have the seven living tzaddikim plus Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. If you say that each Shevet counts as a separate nation, then and Shevet Levi wasn't Choyte in the Egel, so you have 11 other Shvatim, then you need a minion for each of the 10 Shvatim. Therefore, you need 110, so you have 77 for seven tzaddikim for each of the 11 Shvatim, plus Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov will count as the other three for each of the 11 Shvatim, because after all, they're the ancestors of all of them. And this Talmud Chacham was very impressed with that. So that answers the difference. So who's greater than the living or the dead? On the one hand, the living are greater because they can actually do mitzvahs and Hashem gets praised through them. On the other hand, the dead, for example, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, those schosim help us in a way that the schosim of the living do not. Davar Acher continues Reb Tanchum, another way of looking at it. Minhog, another point about the pasuk in Kehelas So minhogi shel olam, the way it works in the world, sar bas of adam goes exera of a human minister makes exera suffik mekayminoisa suffik in mekayminoisa. So it'll be a suffik whether people actually observe it or not. Vim timtalem mekayminoisa, even if they do follow it, b'chayev mekayminoisa mosa and mekayminoisa, they'll only keep it while he's alive, not after he's dead. Vim Moshe Rabbeinu gozer kam exeras v'tikin kam takonos. Yet Moshe made many gzeiros and made many takonos. So Rashi explains that we're not talking about the mitzvahs of the Torah. We're talking about takonos and gzeiros that Moshe Rabbeinu himself made. One example is, for example, the fact that we read from the Torah on each Yom Tov and on each special occasion, we read something appropriate to that day is a takono of Moshe Rabbeinu. And you have a few others here and there throughout Shas. Marshall says that no, it doesn't have to mean that. It means Poshet the gzeiros and the takonos of the Torah. Yeah, of course, Moshe didn't make them up himself, but they come to us through Moshe. Moshe kibbutz Torah miSinai, and therefore it can be justified to call them that they come to us from Moshe. Anyway, the kayyama sein la'olam ala'olam ala'olam, and they continue to exist forever and ever. So isn't it right that Shlomo says that I praise the dead who've already died, even though Moshe has passed away a long time ago? Nevertheless, his Gzeiras Dakonis are still valid in a way that nobody else's are. Interesting, by the way, the historian Josephus, so lived around at the time, according by Sheni, so well over 1,000 years after Moshe Rabbeinu, he writes in one of his books that even now he says Jews act as though Moshe Rabbeinu was constantly looking over their shoulder and ready to criticize them for anything they do. So you see, it tackle work what Moshe did, what he did in making the Jewish people into a nation. And there's also in that connection a story involving it's in a medrash someplace, I don't remember, that Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanania has a discussion about this with Adra Yonis. Adra Yonis quotes the same pasuk about Kelev Chai and Aryan Nes. So he says, I'm alive, Moshe's dead, so by your own Torah, then I'm greater than him. So Rabbi Yeshua tells him, well, let's see, go and make a Gzerah, and let's see how long it lasts. And he orders nobody should light fires in the city of Rome for the next 3 days. Sure enough, not long after that, they're standing on the roof of the palace and they see smoke coming from a couple of different places. What's going on? This guy has a cold and he's a senator and he got special permission, and that guy, whatever. And then Rabbi Yeshua tells him, you know, look at that. You made a Gzeira and it's not even lasting the day. Moshe Rabbeinu has passed away 1,000 years ago and we still keep his Takonis and Gzeiras. So don't think that you understand anything of what that pasuk means. Dover Acha continues Reb Tanchum. Another meaning of Shabeach Ani B'Gomer, another meaning, what does Shlomo mean by saying that he praises the dead more than the living, is Kiddur Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rab. We can explain that using what Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rab to explain a story in Tanakh. Da Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rab. My dichtiv, Pasuk says, we say it every day in davening, Asei mi ois l'tova, the David asks Hashem, make with me a sign for the good, v'yiru sonai v'yevoshu, and my enemies should see it and be embarrassed. What kind of sign does David HaMelech need? David, l'fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rebbeinu Shel Olam, m'choli al ois oven. Forgive me for that avera with Bathsheba. Omaloi m'cholach, Hashem tells him, okay, you're forgiven. So now David says, Omaloi, Asei Mi, and by the way, you have to realize David went through tremendous Yisurim and tremendous Truva and whatever for it. It's not Stam Neighbor, she's just telling him it's a done deal. Anyway, Omaloi, Asei Mi, Ois Bechaye. So now David is asking, make for me a sign while I'm alive. You had all of his various enemies. You had Achitofel, and you had Shimi Ben Gera, and you had others who were constantly mocking him and making fun of him, that you were Mazana with an Eishes Ish and whatever. And then David is asking, if you really forgive me, then show me a sign that I can show to all these people that they'll stop harassing me. Amalai, Hashem tells him, "B'chayecha eni magia." I won't inform. I won't give such a sign while you're alive. B'chayesh Shlomo bincha ani magia. But I will make that known in the time of your son Shlomo. Now there are a couple of reasons for that. One reason is because there was a certain amount of chilul Hashem involved. The Navi, when he tells off David for it, he uses the expression niyet niatzas ovei Hashem, which means that you angered the enemies of Hashem. So on one level, it means that it's a euphemism, meaning you angered Hashem himself. Another meaning of it, though, is it means that you made it that now the enemies of Hashem always have an excuse from then until now to say that David was a choita and therefore we can get away with such things. So first of all, on one level, there was a chilul Hashem, and the Gemara tells us in Yoma that when a person has made a chilul Hashem, the only full kapara for it is after 120. So therefore, the complete sign couldn't be given while Shlomo was alive. But another point was also that, after all, who was Shlomo's mother? Bathsheba. So like this, if there really was an avera over there that David didn't deserve to be forgiven for, then Shlomo wouldn't be the next legitimate king of the Jewish people. So now when he's king and building the Beis Hamikdash, and as the Gemara is going to go on to say, he was answered with his tefillas only in the schos of David. That'll be the clearest proof to everybody that his birth was legitimate and that David had not really done such a serious avera.
people still alive at that point to see it?
Some of them, I guess, were. I mean, Shimi Ben Gera had been executed a couple of years earlier, the pasuk says. Achitofel had killed himself, but apparently there were other people still around who were alive to see it. Yeah. As the Gemara says later on, the faces of all of David's enemies turned black at the bottom of a pot. So evidently there was still some of them, there was still some of them left in. Anyway, so what happened? How did Hashem answer Shlomo in the schus of David? When Shlomo built the Beis Hamikdash, bikshu lahachnis oren lebeis kodesh hakodeshim. They wanted to bring in the oren into the kodesh hakodeshim. But the gates stuck together and wouldn't open. The doorway into the Kodesh HaKadoshim would not open. The Medrash actually says it differently. The Medrash says not so much that the door wouldn't open, but the Oren from back to Moshe Rabbeinu's times was an Amma, where it was 2.5 Amas by 1.5 Amas. But the Shlomo had built like an enlarged Oren, which was 10 Amas wide, and the doorway was also exactly 10 Amas wide. So therefore, it couldn't fit in. Shlomo said 24 songs to Hashem and was not answered. What are these 24 Renonos? So Rashi says two possibilities. One is in Shlomo Malach's Tefillah, which is in Sefer Malachim, and again repeated with a little variation in Divrei Hayamim. You have 24 times in various expressions for davening, Rina, Tefillah, Tchina, and so forth. If you count them up, you have 24 such expressions. The other explanation Rashi says is that it means that they said the 24 brachas that you say on a tiny tzibur. Yeah, the regular 18 brachas of Shemana Esrei plus 6 extra ones. Rashi says though v'loy nehira. That's not really a good explanation, because in fact the Gemara in brachas that we learned a few months back says the other way around. Why do the Chachamim make 24 brachas on a tiny is to evoke the 24 renonis that Shlomo said at that time. A different explanation that some Mephoshim say is that the psukim that the Gemara is going to quote now that he was saying are at the end of Kapitel Chof Dalet of Tillim. So he said the entire first 24 Kapitel Chof Tillim. And then at the end of it, you have the psukim Sushar Meshechim. Pasach Ba'ama Sushar Meshechim Yinofsu Bizkailim V'yavim Melech HaKavod. So he starts asking the gates to lift up their heads and open up. Rohatu Basri the Mivlei. The gates started running after him, chasing after him to swallow him up. They thought he's saying V'yavim Melech HaKavod. Maybe like he's talking about himself. Omru Mihu Zeh Melech HaKavod. Who is this Melech HaKavod? What do you think? You're the Melech HaKavod or something? Omru Lehu Hashem Izuz V'Gibur. And still they didn't open. Chazav Amos Sushar Meshechem V'Sup Yisraelim V'yavim Melech HaKavod. And again they ask Mihu Zeh Melech HaKavod. And this time he answers clearly Hashem Tzvakas U'Melech HaKavod Zela. And still V'loy Nana. And still he wasn't answered. And the gates wouldn't open. Kivin Sha'omer Hashem Alekim Al Toshib Pnei Meshechecha. Then when he said, Hashem, don't turn back the face of your anointed one, David HaMelech, who had been anointed with Hashem and HaMishka. Zohar v'chaste, David Abdecha, remember the kindness, the chassidus of your servant David, miyad nene, then right away he was answered. At that moment, the faces of all of David's enemies turned black from embarrassment because they realized how they had misjudged him. And now everybody realized that Hashem had taka forgiven David for that avail. So now, so isn't it a good thing to say that Shlomo said, I praise the dead who already died? You see that the schus of Shlomo didn't help, but the schus of David HaMelech who already passed away helped. And then we'll continue tomorrow with the rest of his Rosh. That's the Shem. Yom Yom Mashiach Ge'ola. So Shushan Purim, Tesvav Adesheni. We know that in Yemos Mashiach, when the Avodah of Bnei Yisrael of refining out the good from the bad as has been finished, and we reach the Shlemos that we had before the Chet Etz Hadas, there still will be a Metzios of evil in the world, but it will be completely separated from good. Then in the world of Tchias HaMesim, which is after Yemos Mashiach, then Hashem will altogether remove that Ra from the world, as it says, V'esruach HaToma Adam in Aretz. We were in the middle of halachas of brachas, in particular the halachas of mistakes in brachas. So a person has to usually, when he says a bracha, he has to concentrate on what he's saying. But if b'dieved, a person had a mistake in kavanah, So for example, a person picked up a cup of a drink thinking that it was wine and he made the bracha bar priagofen. Before he got to the words bar priagofen, he realized that it's something else and finishes shakal niyamid varay, he doesn't have to say the bracha over again. Because because it was only a toast and kavana, so they have, and vice versa, all the more so, if he thought that it was water and started saying the bracha, thinking to say shakol, and finishes off and says bar priagofen, then it's yotze, then he's for sure yotze, because after all, b'dieved, if he had said shakol and wine, he'd be yotze in the first place.